Good morning. It's really a pleasure and an honor to be here. I have to say, to start with, that I have learned so much in the course of listening to the various presenters that have preceded me here that my mind is buzzing, and I'm just really very happy to be here. I'd also like to specifically thank Greg Addison and especially Phil Hall for helping me get up here today. Okay. And I should mention also, I'm very grateful to Flo Conway and Jim Siegelman for their fabulous book on Norbert Wiener, and some of the points that I'll touch on today you will have heard mentioned last night, but I trust it won't be too repetitious. I am neither a mathematician nor an engineer, so my references in this paper to the technical aspects of Wiener's contributions in those disciplines will be minimal, and I hope safely general. What I am is a journalist who, for more than two decades, has studied the history and philosophy of technology, and who recently self-published a book based on those studies. In the final section of that book, I pay homage to Norbert Wiener's outspoken ethical stands in regard to the dangers of the technologies he was so instrumental in bringing into being, and it's Wiener's ethics and the ideas behind them that I'd like to talk about here. Wiener was far ahead of his time, as I think everybody here knows, in recognizing that our habits of technology-fueled consumption pose significant threats to health and the environment. He predicted that within the foreseeable future, we would be facing growing coal and gas shortages, growing scarcity of water with which to supply our cities, growing rates of infection due to increased air travel and antibiotic resistance, growing problems related to processed and synthetic foods, growing risk of nuclear power accidents, and growing risks of nuclear war. Wiener did more than worry about these things. He spoke out about them in best-selling books and magazine articles and in speeches. He also declined to participate, as you know, in military and corporate projects that would make those threats more likely to materialize, a stance that cost him dearly in terms of his career, his pocketbook, and his reputation. In his personal life, Wiener was, in many respects, a difficult and unpleasant man, I think it's fair to say. But his willingness to stand up for what he believed in and his willingness to pay the price for those beliefs make him, in my view, a genuinely heroic figure. Perhaps the perception of Wiener's that most impresses me and that I think most crucial for us to understand, remember, and act upon today is his appreciation of uncertainty, both in human understanding and as human understanding is manifested in the technologies humans create. The evidence is overwhelming that uncertainty is a universal, inescapable quality of the human condition, and that our endeavors to affect change in the world need, therefore, to be accompanied by a substantial measure of caution and humility. That so many scientists and technicians seem not to appreciate this simple truth would be astonishing were it not for the fact that their pursuits are to a large degree driven by a quest for certainty. Wiener was rare among his colleagues, very rare, I think, in recognizing that contradiction, which is one of the reasons his colleagues found him so annoying. In this paper, I want to review Wiener's positions on uncertainty and then attempt to place him in historical perspective as a significant contributor to what the philosopher of technology Langdon Wiener calls the counter-tradition to the dream of mastery. Wiener's description recognizes the point I just made, that the desire to achieve mastery over nature, over events, over other people, and over uncertainty itself is to a large degree the motivation that drives the scientific and technological projects. The counter-tradition to the dream of mastery recognizes that the dream of mastery is just that, a dream, one that we long to achieve but never will. for me at least, early evidence that Norbert Wiener probably was a genius can be found in the paper that Jim and Flo mentioned last night, The Theory of Ignorance, a paper he wrote at the age of 10. According to Dark Hero of the Information Age, Wiener spoke in that paper about the impossibility of being certain of anything and disputed man's presumption in declaring that his knowledge has no limits. All human knowledge, he added, is based on an approximation. Uncertainty would become a central focus of Wiener's career in science and of the ethical stands that accompanied that career. His breakthrough paper on Brownian motion was inspired by gazing at the waters of the Charles River from his office at MIT, wondering how he could find some sort of quantifiable pattern within the seemingly random ripples and waves on the river's surface. This was a problem that would lead to the dynamic at the heart of cybernetics, and that can also be seen philosophically as addressing one of the central riddles of existence. As Wiener himself later put it, the highest density of mathematics is nothing less than the discovery of order within disorder. Wiener's solution for that problem emerged from the techniques of statistical mechanics developed by Willard Gibbs, an obscure theorist who Wiener considered America's greatest scientist. Gibbs' applications of probability theory demonstrated, Wiener believed, that chance is part of the warp and weft of physics, and thus affirmed his recognition of a sort of irrationality in the world. That's a quote from Wiener, and I like that a lot. Even before discovering Gibbs, Wiener had the chutzpah to challenge the certainty of Bertrand Russell, again as mentioned last night, with whom Wiener briefly studied after earning his doctorate at Harvard. Wiener was repulsed by Russell's entire approach to mathematics. Conway and Siegelman quote a letter Wiener wrote to his father expressing a great dislike for the great man. His mind impresses one as a keen, cold, narrow, logical machine, Wiener wrote, that cuts the universe into neat little packets that measure, as it were, just 3 inches each way. That's quite a statement about some of the tendencies of technology in general, as well as Bertrand Russell, I think. And I'm sure that some of the people in this room are probably at work at addressing that problem. Wiener soon went public with his reservations regarding Russell's too neat mathematics, publishing a paper attacking the central argument in Russell's and Alfred North Whitehead's magisterial Principia Mathematica. Contrary to what Russell and Whitehead claim, Wiener wrote, it is highly probable that we can get no certainty that is absolute in the propositions of logic and mathematics, at any rate in those that derive their validity from the postulates of logic. 20 years later, Wiener would note with pleasure that Gödel's incompleteness theorems affirm that judgment. As he put it in the second volume of his autobiography, to me, logic and learning and all mental activity have always been incomprehensible as a complete and closed picture and have been understandable only as a process by which man puts himself in rapport with his environment. And this is the famous part of that quote. We are swimming upstream against a great torrent of disorganization, which tends to reduce everything to the heat death of equilibrium and sameness described in the second law of thermodynamics. Now I'm going to talk about the counter tradition to the dream of mastery. Langdon Winner's discussion of the counter tradition to the dream of mastery can be found in his seminal book, Autonomous Technology, Techniques Out of Control as a Theme in Political Thought. That title suggests the degree to which the ideas Winner explores reflect and affirm Wiener's belief in uncertainty. Indeed, at one point, Winner quotes a long confessional passage from Wiener's Cybernetics, in which Wiener acknowledges his responsibility for unleashing powerful new techniques into the world of Belsen and Hiroshima, knowing that those who would inherit access to those techniques included the most irresponsible and most venal of our engineers. As Wiener well knew, a technology can go awry even when deployed by the most responsible and least venal of engineers, simply because once unleashed, it interacts with its environment in ways that are impossible to fully predict or control. Wiener provides a number of quotations that demonstrate how long and how often that impossibility has been recognized. One is a poem from Solon of Athens, dating from approximately the 6th century BCE. "Danger for all," Solon said, "lies in all action, and there is no telling which way the end will be after a thing is begun." It's likely that one of the classic narratives in the counter tradition to the Dream of Mastery, the Tower of Babel story in the Book of Genesis, was composed within a century or so of Solon's poem. Wiener points out that one of the chief reasons mastery is unattainable is the interconnectedness of the world. Because of that interconnectedness, repercussions expand promiscuously. Consequences fall like dominoes. The Roman emperor Marcus Aurelius seemed to anticipate particle physics when he said, "All things are implicated with one another, and the bond is holy. There is hardly anything unconnected with another thing." Hannah Arendt, in her book, The Human Condition, reflected on the implications of interconnection. Action, she wrote, "no matter what its specific content, always establishes relationships and therefore has an inherent tendency to force open all limitations and cut across all boundaries. These consequences are boundless because action, though it may proceed from nowhere, so to speak, acts into a medium where every reaction becomes a chain reaction and where every process is the cause of new processes. Since action acts upon beings who are capable of their own actions, reaction, apart from being a response, is always a new action that strikes out on its own and affects others. Thus, action and reaction among men never move in a closed circle and can never be reliably confined to two partners." With his understanding that information and feedback are the lingua franca of both organisms and machines, Wiener recognized that the chain reactions to which Arendt referred apply not only to the relationships between human beings, but also to the relationships between human beings and machines, and to the relationships between machines and machines. For that reason, he also recognized that, thanks to the growing power, ubiquity, and interconnectedness of our machines, the dream of mastery has become one of the most dangerous illusions of our time. In his final book, God and Gollum, Inc., published posthumously in 1964, Wiener used Goethe's poem, The Sorcerer's Apprentice, to convey how quickly technology can escape our control. "For much of history," he wrote, "the ramifications of misplaced intentions were relatively limited, simply because the scope of our reach was relatively limited. Human impotence," he wrote, "hitherto shielded us from the full destructive impact of human folly. Modern technologies were in the process," he said, "of changing that. The penalties for errors of foresight, great as they are now," Wiener wrote, "will be enormously increased as automation comes into full use." I think Bruce Snyder made some of those points very nicely this morning. Speed, Wiener frequently argued, is the most basic reason this is true. In a 1960 essay for Science magazine, He wrote that although we may, in theory, be able to control our machines, such control means little if we can't impose it until it's too late. By the very slowness of our human actions, Wiener said, our effective control of our machines may be nullified. By the time we're able to react to information conveyed by our senses and stop the car we are driving, it may already have run head-on into a wall. I think of some of the slides that were shown of the Deepwater Horizon disaster and Fukushima earlier in these sessions are good. There's many examples, but those are two good ones. Let me see. The question we have to ask ourselves today, it seems to me, is whether the technological project as a whole may be taking us head-on into a wall. The survival of civilization as we know it literally depends on the technologies that sustain it, even though it's becoming increasingly evident that some of these technologies are in the process of destroying the planet. We can't bring ourselves to surrender them because the disruption required to do so would destroy us. Langdon Winter calls these intractable commitments the technological imperative. In my book, I call them evidence of de facto technological autonomy. The most obvious autonomous technologies are the artificial intelligence systems that Wiener pioneered, which are daily becoming ever more capable of running themselves. Wiener was keenly aware that by crossing the boundary between machine and organism, his work increasingly came to resemble the building of the golem. Like Frankenstein, he knew, the golem is a creature capable of acting for reasons of its own, and it doesn't always follow directions. More than a century before Wiener, another exponent of the counter tradition to the dream of mastery, Thomas Carlyle, expressed the same concern. The shadow we have wantonly evoked stands terrible before us, he said, and will not depart at our bidding. Thank you.